Is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, April 1st, 2022. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York, where there's a lot of concern this morning because Jacob deGrom, who had so many injury issues last year, was limited to 15 starts. Felt tightness in his right shoulder while playing long toss, and he's been scratched from his scheduled spring start later today. We expect to get more information as this podcast moves along about Jacob deGrom possibly having an MRI today. Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson had his season opening suspension reduced from 3 games to 2 games after a confrontation with an umpire last September. The Kansas City Royals have decided to keep Mike Matheny through at least the 2023 season. They picked up his option yesterday. Albert Pujols, Cardinals' new DH, talked with our Marley Rivera, and Marley asked him whether or not his goal is to get 700 home runs. Remember, he needs 21 more.
I just don't get caught up in that, you know, and I think that's something that, you know, 22 years later, going into my 22 season in the big leagues, like, I don't going to change all of a sudden, you know, and try to chase numbers, you know, because chasing numbers is like chasing a ghost. You know, you can't do that. I mean, if you would have asked me in 2001, if we go 21 years back and told me that I was going to sit here chasing 700, I would have said, you crazy.
Since the last podcast, the Cardinals had a pretty good offensive day against the Washington Nationals. This was from a couple days ago in the top of the ninth inning. The sound from KMOX.
Campy Camp and Earth, this is Mr. Jones from over here in Blue Springs.
There's a line drive in the right center field. That's going to get down. The run is going to score. It is now 29-8, Cardinals. So Connor Capel.
Have a day, four RBIs. Four. Do I hear 30?
And then we're going to cut it off.
And they did 29-8. Even in spring training, when more runs are scored, that was not a classic spring training game. So Taylor, the other day, ordered some tickets to a game in San Diego. It's a Saturday before Sunday night game. Pretty fired up about that.
Ooh, I know you like your little pre-Sunday night baseball excursion. In San Diego, lovely place to take in a game. Probably, hopefully would be a hotter ticket if our guy Fernando Tatis Jr. was playing, but still a hot ticket nonetheless.
It will be opening weekend in San Diego. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seats Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Juan Soto doing Juan Soto things for the Nationals.
Because it's one of the harder pitches to learn in general. And
go ahead, call it, Joe.
Nah, we don't want to call that one. It's not what you want to see. But that guy's good. I think that's pretty well established. That guy's pretty good.
Yeah, Juan Soto's always getting it done. The ones who get it done is brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support and access to product specialists. Call, click Grainger.com. Or stop by. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, it is last call for Bald Men on Campus as we look down the barrel of an exciting Final Four this weekend. That's Saturday evening. But check out Seth Greenberg, Jay Billis, Alfonso Ellis cutting it up about Duke, North Carolina. Just a huge matchup, and Kansas, Villanova, which should be a lot of fun too. Check out Bald Men on Campus wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, Their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Rabbit Train, get ready to leave the station, because next Thursday, I know, Carl, you're going to be part of the opening night broadcast down in Atlanta. You've got the Reds against the defending champion Atlanta Braves. And then 3 days later, your debut as play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball with David Cohn and Eduardo Perez.
Yeah, I was just doing some research on the Atlanta Braves and them sort of on the Matt Olson chapter, and the stars aligning for Matt Olson with regards to like buying a home in Atlanta, and then he gets traded to Atlanta, and he buys the home without knowing he's getting traded to Atlanta, let alone anywhere. And then he signs a huge deal. Hearing you talk about getting ready for an upcoming season and going to Atlanta where they were celebrating a World Series in October, and then heading to New York for a Red Sox Yankees and to be in the booth for those games. I understand what Olson was talking about, where the stars are aligning and this is such a experience to look forward to and embrace. Yeah, I can't wait. And the Atlanta component of it, I mean, I know you know this, you know, Truist Park and what they've done around that ballpark and the excitement about the Braves coming off a World Series season. If you're ever going to temper a loss of somebody like Freddie Freeman, Atlanta with a World Series title, a Matt Olson extension and signing, Ronald Acuna coming back, they've sold more season tickets this year than they've ever sold. So they're really feeling great about themselves and riding high, and I can't wait to be back in that environment.
Yeah, my favorite story from the Matt Olson whirlwind, that was the word he used about those 24 hours, less than that, in fact, when the Atlanta Braves made the trade with Oakland. You know, he gets word of the trade, and Alex Anthopoulos, the Braves general manager, calls him and says to him, "Hey, I'm going to come out at you hard right away. We want to sign you to a long-term deal." And that was about noon, 1 o'clock Eastern time when that conversation took place. Alex called B.B. Abbott, Olson's agent, right after that. And then hours later, as Olson's getting ready to board a plane in Arizona, B.B. Abbott tells him, "Look, you know, make sure you're on Wi-Fi because I might have to get some approval from you about some deals." And so just hours later, after just a little bit of haggling, B.B. texts Matt that, yes, the Braves offer is $168 million. And part of Olson's reaction, other than a profanity, like, right, like, you know, holy crap, was to ask B.B. He was so stunned by the all these turn of events. He asked him if the contract was guaranteed.
He forgot what sport he was playing. Hey, hell, you're 30,000 feet up there and all this stuff is going on. Look, that's a hard one. I thought he was going to ask BB if any of this was real. Like, am I sleeping? Is any of this happening? It is an incredible stars aligning story. It really is. It's amazing.
Yeah, that was certainly a surprising turn of events. And it feels like with Jacob deGrom, this is not at all surprising. In fact, every time after they signed Max Scherzer, you know, there was the excitement in the media. Wow, you know, you've got Max Scherzer, you got Jacob deGrom. And the whole time my thought was you have to qualify everything with if they stay healthy, because it feels like after what we saw with DeGrom last year, it was inevitable that we could potentially see a breakdown. What about for you?
Well, 100%. I don't know. I know he came in. He looked a little bit stronger, as if he was, you know, trying to build up around it so that none of these things would happen. And then having shoulder tightness, and I know the way it played out yesterday was, you know, Buck Showalter had a press conference, and then he went back out later to say, just want to let everybody know that we're dealing with Jacob deGrom. He's got some shoulder tightness, and we'll know more tomorrow, meaning today. And there's a huge level of concern. And I think to some extent, even though we saw Scherzer during the World Series with the Nationals, wake up and couldn't get out of bed, it's incredible how durable he has been over his career. And you're in this period with Jacob where it feels like you're on eggshells, and you just know that the next step, the next day, the next outing can be a real bad one. You know, we're watching the UConn women, Buster, play in the NCAA tournament in the Final Four. And of course, their best player, Paige Beckers, hurt her knee during the season. And every time I watch them play, and we watched a lot, I always wonder to myself, like, how healthy is that? And is this the step that's going to cause it to kind of re-injure itself? That's how I feel about DeGrom every time he's gone out there since these injuries began to crop up. And it's such an easy tease, because I do think Jacob, even compromised, is better than 95% of the pitchers. That's the teaser in all this, how good he is, even if he's not 100%, and holding out hope that he was going to somehow be 100%. That seemed like fool's gold, and certainly this shoulder issue was a big concern. Somebody within the organization, when I said, give me a level of concern, 1 to 10, they pegged it at a 5, and that's before they get the imaging results, which I think is happening today.
Yeah, I would put the level of concern that I think most people would have at about a 9 or 10 working in baseball, just because
I would agree.
Look, I tend to think now of Max Scherzer. And by the way, just as you just mentioned that, got confirmation that as we speak, Jacob DeGrom is going for an MRI
this morning.
So, I tend to think now of Max Scherzer as being an outlier, much in the same way Nolan Ryan was an outlier in terms of how much Max throws, how durable he is. People for years would say, just do the same throwing program as Nolan Ryan. And I'd be like, nah, no, this guy is just a freak. Max Scherzer is a freak. Jacob DeGrom, on the other hand, it's a normal trajectory to me in terms of his injuries, because, I've had front office people say, if you want to know the greatest predictor, the most accurate predictor of injuries, it's previous injuries. And if you look at Jacob DeGrom, May 4th of last year, scratched from a start because of a right side issue. May 9th, placed on the injured list. June 11th, right elbow issue, left his start early. June 16th, right shoulder issue, left his start early. He had a right forearm issue on July 18th. And then, of course, he was placed in the injured list, didn't make any more starts, finished with just 15 starts. And when he said a couple weeks ago, and I love Jacob DeGrom, you do too, in terms of, how good of a pitcher he is. When he said 2 weeks ago, I'm opting out of the rest of my contract after this year, I was shaking my head. I'm like, you don't know that. You just don't know that, because we might have another breakdown.
Of course. And thankfully, I don't think you're right. You didn't sign anything that said, yes, I'm opting out. So you could probably say, I'm obviously not, because I got hurt and all this is guaranteed, et cetera. Tough thing to say. Clearly bet on himself the same way that his new teammate, Max Scherzer, has bet on himself time and time again. But that's a huge, huge reason for concern. And now you kind of pivot to almost what Alex Anthopoulos did last year when Acuna got hurt. Do the Mets now just quickly go out and recognize, even if he's able to come back, we need security? I mean, Chris Bassett is great and Scherzer is great. There's all sorts of optimism and hope about Carrasco and Taijuan Walker. But to Billy Epler and Buck and Steve Cohen, make it clear, like, all right, let's get Frankie Montas's group on the phone. Let's call Oakland. Let's figure out how we can plug this hole if he doesn't come back. And, the Braves are a great example. They won without Soroka at all last year. DeGrom is a next level guy. You're losing the best pitcher in baseball when he's right. But you put yourself in a position to be able to at least compete. I don't look at them without Jacob as a team that can't do anything. I look at them with Jacob as a World Series contender, but they got to do something quickly. I think, and given where they're at and what the moves that they've made have gotten them to, you got to keep going, don't you?
Oh, no question. You pushed a huge percentage of your chips for 2022 into the pot. Steve Cohen stepping out, spending money because he wants to win. If you can make a deal, then go ahead and do it. And I think that's part of the reason why Oakland basically decided, you know what? We're not getting exactly what we want to get in return for either Sean Manaea or Frankie Montas. And at some point, there's going to be an injury that's going to compel some contender to do something. And this might be the case.
Without question. Maybe that's all the right. Michael Conforto thing, too. I know the shoulder thing there, but Boris is smart. Let's wait. Somebody's going to need a center fielder real soon.
while you were in, you know, in that area, Mets camp recently, you also stopped by the Cardinals camp. The other day, Carl, I was on radio in St. Louis, and I talked about how they asked me, you know, what I think of the Cardinals. And I think they're the favorites to win the National League Central. But I mentioned that part of the reason why that is because nobody did anything in the division. Like the Reds, you know, cut back. They traded away a bunch of guys. We know the Pirates are tanking. The Chicago Cubs made very measured moves. The Brewers, you know, made moves where they reduced, you know, salary on their offensive side. You know, that was their goal. They really didn't add much other than signing Andrew McCutchen. And so I think that's the context within I look at the Cardinals as being the potential front runner in the Central. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I think that I would pick the Brewers. I think the Brewers are the team to beat. You know, I think a lot of the Brewers' issues last year, and we covered them a lot. We were there in the postseason doing their radio. They could not hit. There's no doubt they could not hit. It was terrible. I'm going to bank on Yelich being better. I don't think somebody of his talent could be much worse than he was. I think he's going to be better. I do think some of the offensive moves, while they cut payroll, I think should improve them. But look, this team wins with pitching and defense, and their pitching, assuming health, and I think with at least the three starters, there's a better than average chance they're going to stay healthy. And you bring Williams back with Hader. I think they're on the cusp of being able to go out and hopefully being as good as they are, as healthy as they are, as deep as they are with their pitching. If we do need to make a move, that Stearns and Atanasio will, you know, give them the money they need to go get another bat. Be honest, I thought a guy like Schwarber would have been perfect with the Milwaukee Brewers. But I do think that to me, I look at the Cardinals and you talk about a win now, my gosh. Albert going back there is a fan favorite move, and it's kind of a dream come true thing for him. But it reminds me of just where that team is as far as age. I think they're obviously old, and I think they may be a little too old. I wish there was a lot more youth on that team and athleticism. I just feel like I'm a little skeptical on the Cardinals relative to the Brewers. I think the Cubs are going to be a little bit better. I don't think they're in that group, but I think they're going to be competitive. I like the Brewers in that division, to be honest.
There's no question that for the Cardinals, the great X factor is Jack Flaherty, who, yeah, you know, in theory would be their ace, you know, the young guy who's throwing 180, 200 innings and leading that staff. But I've gotten to the point with Flaherty, Carl, where I kind of think of him like DeGrom. There's been enough injury issues really since that 2020 COVID season in which you begin to wonder, okay, how durable is he? In fact, I've wondered, you know, that great, that fun story, it wasn't a great story, but that fun story about how when the Cardinals were going through COVID protocol, when they had players test positive and Jack Flaherty was throwing into a mattress in his hotel room, I've wondered about how that all contributed to where he is now.
You're right. But that's an unknown. I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's a very legitimate question. But unfortunately, once you begin to have a history of injuries, you know, it's amazing how long it takes to erase the perception that you're injury prone. I mean, what do you think that the timeline on that is? 2 to 3 years of clean health, of making 30 starts a year? Because that's now the same way Jacob DeGrom moving forward is going to be, barring surgery and the ability to fix it, is going to be, well, there's an injury risk there. That's, yep, how you look at Jack Flaherty. And that's, again, I don't know what the time frame is on proving I'm not injury prone, but he's got a ways to go on that.
Yeah. And you hope for the best for him and that he can get back on the mound and make his 25 to 30 starts during the course of this season. Before we go, I want to ask you about the comments made by Brian Cashman the other day to The Athletic, in which he basically talked about how he views the 2017 Yankees as being the champions because in the playoffs that year, the American League Championship Series that year, they were beaten by the Astros. And as we found out later, the Astros were conveying signs in real time to their hitters. And Carla, you know, I've thought about this moment. I'll never, you know, I covered that series for ESPN, and I'll never forget doing live shots right outside of the Astros clubhouse after they beat the Yankees in that series. And you know where the visiting buses are parked. It requires the players to walk right past the home clubhouse. And I'll never forget, you know, Aaron Boone, Aaron Judge passing Astros players who had sort of spilled out into the hallway with family members wearing goggles, all drenched in spray. Aaron Boone stopping and congratulating A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager at that time. Brian Cashman making a point of going in. And I think it was Hinch that he congratulated. But, you know, being a good sport, and of course, all the information comes out, and it's pretty clear from these comments that Brian Cashman is very angry. I just don't know what purpose it serves for him to do this. I think it's a bad idea that he said this out loud. And it's also, quite frankly, it's very presumptuous to, you know, to view the Yankees as the 2017 champions when they didn't, in fact, win the World Series.
You think? Right. I was surprised. I guess it's a reminder for people who were not necessarily, and I know the question was framed about the Yankees drought, but it's almost a reminder that the Astros won, but their victory was tainted, as opposed to really being an indictment on the Yankees, who've been, you know, successful, but certainly haven't won won any World Series in a long time. And that of course would really irk the hell out of me if I was the guy that was in charge of putting the team together. 100% agree on what value is there. I don't see any value in it other than to remind people and why, what the motivation would be to remind people that the Astros cheated. I don't get it. And I do think I think it was Chris Russo who went off about steroids, et cetera, maybe the year that the Yankees were winning a World Series. Whatever it may be, it opened up a can of worms he probably didn't need to open or want to open. But I never looked at his comments and said, golly, he's right. Yeah, you know, that would have ended the drought. There's no connection between the two thoughts. To me, it was more of a, if you wanted to tweak and remind people that it's a tainted World Series, that's what you did. But it certainly didn't lead me to the path of, oh, that's right, at the end of the path, there are the Yankees lifting a World Series trophy. Didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, Brian Cashman's quote, the only thing that stopped the 2017 Yankees was something that was so illegal and horrific. So I get offended when I start hearing we haven't been to the World Series since 2009, because I'm like, well, I think we actually did it the right way, pulled it down, brought it back up, drafted well, traded well, developed well, signed well. The only thing that derailed us was a cheating circumstance that threw us off. And look, there's, you know, I'm one of those that believes that the Astros that year had an advantage over other teams because of the real-time manner in which they conveyed sign stealing. But I don't think you're going to get a lot of sympathy if you're the general manager of the Yankees from fans of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Of course not.
or the, you know, the Indians, the Cleveland Indians, or most other teams. Like, they're not going to feel sorry for the New York Yankees, given the fact that on a year-in and year-out basis, the Yankees outspend other teams by 30, 40, 50%.
No, you're to me, you're just stepping in quicksand. And every time you say, yeah, but, someone else is going to say, yeah, but remember the Dodgers were just a lot better than you the next year and they didn't cheat. I just don't make the connection. And I'm sure most other people don't recognize that if there were no cheating by the Astros, the Yankees would have had their next World Series title and their first since 2009. Let's just say that's a Grand Canyon size leap.
Yep. 100%. And it should have been something that he just kept to himself and, you know, shared that opinion with you and I and others, you know, over a beer. You know, in terms of saying that out loud and on the record, I was surprised. All right, Ravi.
Yeah.
Good to talk with you, and I will see you in Atlanta next week.
Look forward to it, man. All right, Buster. Thanks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how you doing?
Buster, I'm doing well. It's April, which means we've attained something special here.
Are you an April Fool's guy?
No, I absolutely hate it. What about you?
No, I'm not really an April Fool's guy, although I just did retweet from the National Park Service a tweet they sent out that they're planning on rotating Abraham Lincoln in the Lincoln Memorial 180 degrees to save on the erosion and the exposure in the front. And I'm curious how many people bid on that one. That's a pretty good one, though.
All right. I like that. I'll make an exception for really good ones like that, Buster.
Okay. Speaking of Washington, earlier this week, we saw the Washington Nationals announce that they're going to have a jersey with cherry blossoms on it. And I got to say, a lot of times when I see these, I'm not really a fan, but I really would love to get a cap with the cherry blossoms on it. What'd you think of this?
I'm with you, Buster. There are some of these City Connect jerseys, as they call them, that were, you know, maybe less than good, to be kind. But in this case, I absolutely love it. I think it's a relevant and reverent theme for DC. Anybody who's ever been down there this time of year knows what a big deal the cherry blossoms are. I thought it was nicely executed. I've seen a lot of people on social media griping about the fact that they didn't lean into the pink more than they did, to which I say, well, not everybody can wear an all pink outfit either on the field or somebody, you know, who's buying something like this at retail. But I really liked it, and I thought it was a really unique I don't know necessarily a collaboration, but the timing of the announcement by the Washington Wizards unveiling their own cherry blossom uniforms for next season in the NBA, kind of a unique thing.
Yeah, I love Taylor. What'd you think?
Oh, I'm a big fan of these unis here, and I like them more than the Wizards ones. And I, you know what, Todd, I didn't really consider it, but and I'm not opposed to wearing pink or anything, but I think these ones are better and the Wizards ones are pink and they're kind of like washed out almost. I like the collaboration. I like where their head's at, but I prefer the Nationals uniform.
I will say that there was one other detail of the Nationals uniforms that left me, I don't know, again, big letters that say WSH. Do any of us refer to Washington, D.C. by those three initials?
No. I hate it. It's only worse if you do WAS. That's awful, too.
Yeah, or I mean, just why not a giant D.C. there? Come on.
Blew it.
Or a certain amount of pandering to the entire region. The DMV, Taylor.
Yeah. Buster's exhausted with this conversation.
Yeah. DMV, bad connotations. Reminds me of standing online in Lower Manhattan waiting to get a license renewed. Not a good thing.
All right. Let's get to this week's Phantom franchise. The first of your Phantom franchise presentations.
Buster, we're starting out big. In 1934, the St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series, defeating the Detroit Tigers in seven games. All that year, both before the season and after, the Cardinals were rumored to be on the move to Detroit, a shift that seems inconceivable today and one that would have changed the course of baseball history. Cardinals owner Sam Breeden publicly floated the possibility of a move to Detroit, a city that battled hard through the worst years of the Great Depression, buoyed by its championship sports teams. Baseball was hugely popular in the Motor City in these years. The Tigers led the majors in attendance in both 1934 and 1935, which is a pretty good example of why the shift never stood a chance. The Tigers would never have given up their exclusive territorial rights, something which would have been necessary for the Detroit Cardinals to have ever taken the field of play. A driving factor in the potential move was the Cardinals' ballpark, Sportsman's Park, which was owned by the American League's St. Louis Browns. Despite winning a championship, the Cardinals, the great Gas House Gang, drew only 4,222 fans per game in 1934, all the while paying rent to the Browns. The following year, Breeden was quoted as saying, "I think Detroit would be an ideal spot for the Cardinals, and I would go there in a minute if Tigers owner Frank Navin opened the way for us to come in, but I doubt that he would want us." The 1935 Tigers won the World Series, and Navin passed away a few weeks later. And the Cardinals, of course, stayed put in St. Louis, where they still play today, as one of MLB's flagship clubs. But in the depths of the Great Depression, they almost became the Detroit Cardinals, and they are this week's inaugural Phantom franchise.
Wow. that would have been incredible. Because as you know, the fan base in St. Louis, that generally speaking, when those rankings are done, they're right near the top in terms of support and how that franchise is viewed. And I mean, where this is, in some respects, we're going down fantasy lane a little bit. And I thought to myself, but boy, if you had a combination of the Old English D on the caps of the Detroit Cardinals and the Cardinals uniforms as they are now, that pretty much would be an undefeated combo when we talk about great uniforms and caps. Yes?
Yeah. I mean, talk about a mighty, like, top inner circle Hall of Fame, Buster.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's get to this week's quiz. How about Sarah? You know, she came out of the gate strong last week. She ties with me, gets it correctly, and she's not here this week, which means that by the end of today's quiz, she could be in first place by percentage points.
I don't know how all this works. It's going to be very confusing, but we will forge on without Sarah when you guys are ready. Are you ready?
I am ready. Taylor, are you ready to lose again? I mean, are you ready?
Buster, all right. Read the question, Todd.
Here we go. Going into the 2022 season, the Tigers' Miguel Cabrera needs 13 hits to get to 3,000 for his illustrious career. So here's this week's question. This player was the first to notch his 3,000th hit indoors. Was it A, Eddie Murray, B, Wade Boggs, C, Pete Rose, or D, Dave Winfield? First player to get his 3,000th hit indoors. Eddie Murray, Wade Boggs, Pete Rose, or Dave Winfield?
Wow. Taylor? Oh, no, I got it right. So I've got to go first. I know one for sure, but I'm concerned about the other one. Golly, this is a hard one. I'm going to go D, Dave Winfield.
I'll go Wade Boggs.
Buster is on a roll. It was Dave Winfield, our friend Dave Winfield, on September 16th, 1993 in the Metrodome. Eddie Murray got his in the Metrodome, but this was a couple of years later in 95. Yep. Boggs in the Trop in 99, Taylor. A little afterwards.
Yeah.
and Pete Rose at Riverfront Stadium in Cincy. So there we have it. Blood in the water.
Yeah, very nice. 2-0. As I was going through it, I have a mental image of all these hits, and I was a little bit murky on Dave Winfield's, but I went there. So, Taylor, what's your excuse?
Just lack of baseball knowledge, honestly. It's really hurting. I shouldn't have agreed to participate in a baseball knowledge contest without any baseball knowledge. So, you know, my bad.
I think you were still enraptured by the Washington Nationals cherry blossom uniforms, Taylor.
That's true.
Yeah, maybe. I think my wife might buy a hat this afternoon. I got to scope them out for her. You know, I got other things going on.
Okay, so it is going to be a good day in the end, even though you lost the quiz. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys, thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. First up, we have Todd Tyke at Tooth Tyke writes in, every time I see this truck, I hope Buster gets well soon. And he sent the back of a truck that said, it's from Olney, Illinois, but says Olney, comma, IL. Buster, are you feeling okay over there?
Oh, come on. Like, I know it's April 1st, but that is not a pun. That's not a joke worthy of April 1st. What do you think, Todd? I appreciate it. By the way, I think it Tyke. Is that Todd Tyke, as in George Tyke?
Tyke? Oh, I said Tyke.
Bummer. Todd, I appreciate the sentiment. Thank you for feeling for me and hoping that I'm doing better. But yeah, next time you can do better too.
T. Jones writes in, Buster, what was Brian Cashman thinking?
Yeah, I didn't get your take on that. Are you feeling sorry for the Yankees and Brian Cashman?
Oh, my, just sob story completely. I mean, they should make a movie about it, an epic novel, you know, a clear tearjerker in the state of the Yankees. If only they had the resources to compete, Buster.
Oh, man.
Let's go to Steve P at Steve P 03. Steve writes in, hey, at Buster Posey. Any significant updates on new stadiums or teams moving? Looking at you, Oakland and Tampa, hashtag Bleacher Tweets, which is how I found it. A Buster Posey mix-up. That is just classic.
Yeah, not the first time, won't be the last time. There are many radio interviews that I've done that the host has introduced me as Buster Posey, and I've told the story, and I'm going to mute down the information, hold back some information because I don't want to embarrass anybody. I once did a podcast interview in which the guest thought it was pretty clear at the outset that the host of the podcast was Buster Posey.
That's fantastic. And probably, I mean, Buster, I love you. I think you are great at what you do, but probably a little bit of a disappointment when that happens for.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But yeah. I hid the information. He probably was thinking, boy, Buster Posey doesn't sound like I would guess he sounds.
That is very funny. Classic April Fool's Day joke you could pull there. Andy Felt is up next at Felt Andy. Andy writes in, Buster, thank you for your podcast. As a Dodgers fan, I am concerned about who plays second base this year during spring. Muncy is only playing third and first. Do you think this means that Lux will be playing the majority of the time at second base, or are you hearing something else?
I think that that position will be in a state of flux for them all year. It'll depend on the matchups. It'll depend on, you know, do you have a ground ball pitcher on the mound? Who's best suited defensively? Chris Taylor, you know, we'll get some starts there. There'll be some other guys that they move in. I think that at the end of the year, when we look at all the Dodger positions, second base will be the one where we see the most number of players used.
Last one for the week, Richard Kelsey at That Chester Kid writes in, I'm betting Juan Soto will double the amount of Nationals wins in walks this year. What's the record for most walks drawn in a single season? Your friendly researcher over here looked it up. Barry Bonds, 232. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, and he had over 100 intentional walks that year. I think the number that pops out of my mind is like 114. I think you're right. I think Juan Soto is going to get walked a lot. I would say this, the fact that the Nationals invested a lot of money in Nelson Cruz will at least make opposing managers feel a little bit differently. But in the end, I mean, how many guys would you rather pitch to than Juan Soto in the major leagues? Like everybody?
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Ravi, Todd, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Thanks for listening. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.